We present Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter Wimsey in Busman's Honeymoon by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted for radio by Alistair Beaton, with Sarah Bedell as Lady Peter Wimsey, Peter Jones as Bunter, and special guest Peter Vaughan as Superintendent Kirk. Episode 3, A Policeman's Lot.
The discovery of a murder victim in the cellar of one's honeymoon home is scarcely conducive to the creation of wedded harmony. Yet there is little doubt that both Lord Peter Wimsey and his bride felt a certain fascination in speculating about how the murder was committed. The doctor's evidence suggested the classic blunt instrument much favoured by detective novelists, but there was no blunt instrument in the house which conformed with the medical facts of the case. One thing alone was clear. The murderer was left-handed. That Joe Sellon, the local police constable, was also left-handed seemed not unduly to trouble Superintendent Kirk. He preferred to ponder the information that Aggie Twitterton, the dead man's niece, had stood to benefit under the terms of the will. Miss Twitterton, however, was not the only one with reason to murder the unlamented Mr. Noakes. Frank Crutchley, the gardener, had been cheated out of his savings by Noakes, while the housekeeper, Mrs. Ruddle, harboured resentments against so many people that Noakes could hardly have been an exception. The local sweep, too, an agreeable, if garrulous character named Puffett, had been heard to speak bitterly of the dead man's meanness. Even the Reverend Simon Goodacre could not automatically be thought of as beyond all suspicion.
Well, don't just stand there, lad. Give the Reverend a seat.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir.
Thank you, Superintendent. Most kind of you.
Make those notes of yours good and neat now, Joe Sellon.
Yes, sir.
I've been in touch with the undertaker, Superintendent. I'm not acquainted with the official procedure in such cases, but no doubt a coffin will have to be provided.
Oh, certainly.
Ah, yes, thank you. I have referred them to you because I imagine the body is no longer in the house.
It's over at the Crown. The inquest will have to be held there.
Ah, yes, oh dear, the inquest, yes. Thank you. Frank Crutchley spoke to me as I came up the path.
Oh, what did he say?
Well, I think he thinks he might be suspected.
What makes him think that?
Oh, dear me, I fear I'm putting my foot in it. He didn't say he did think it. I only thought he might think it from what he said. But I assure you, Superintendent, that I can confirm his alibi in every particular. He was at choir practice from 6:30 to 7:30, and then he took me over to Pagford for the whist drive and brought me back here at 10:30. So you see...
Well, that's all right, Mr. Goodacre. I've already checked that part of his alibi with Tom Puffett. If an alibi's wanted for them times, Crutchley and Puffett and you are all out of it.
I'm out of it? Oh, bless my soul, Superintendent.
That's only my joke, sir. You needn't note that bit down, Joe.
Hmm? Oh, yes, right, sir.
Well, now, is there anything I can do to help?
Thank you very much, sir. I don't know as there is. You spent Wednesday night at home, I take it, after 10:30?
Why, of course. My wife and my servant can substantiate my statement, but you scarcely suppose...
We ain't got a supposing things yet, sir. That comes later. This is all routine. You didn't call here at any time during the last week, by any chance?
Oh, no, Mr. Noakes was away.
Oh, you knew he was away, did you, sir?
No. At least I supposed so. Well, that is to say, yes, I called here on Thursday morning, but I got no answer, so I supposed that he was away, as he sometimes was. In fact, I fancy Mrs. Ruddle told me so. Yes, that was it.
Ah, yes. When you came on Thursday, you didn't notice anything funny about the house?
Oh, goodness me, no, nothing unusual at all. What would there be to notice?
Well, nothing really, sir. Thanks for your help.
Oh, right. Well, I'll be on my way. Yes. Good afternoon, Superintendent. Good afternoon, Joe.
Now, Joe, go and find Lady Peter and ask her if she'd kindly fetch Miss Twitterton down to the sitting room to have a chat with me. There's a few things about that lady's behaviour as I'd like to understand a bit better.
Oh, please, 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 Lady Peter, don't leave me.
Well, Miss Twitterton, that's really up to the superintendent.
That's all right, my lady. I'm sure I don't mind.
Come and sit down over here.
That's right. There's nothing to be alarmed about, Miss Twitterton. Just a few simple questions, and Constable Sullen here will be taking notes. Now, when did you last see Mr. Knox?
Oh, not for about 10 days. I looked in last Sunday after morning service. I mean, of course, last Sunday week. I come over, you see, to play the organ for the dear vicar.
You have a key for the front door, haven't you?
Oh, yes, and the back door, too. They never leave me, except last night, of course, when Lord Peter had them.
You haven't ever lent the front door key to anyone?
Oh, dear, no, not anybody. I mean, if Uncle was away and Frank Crutchley wanted to get in on a Wednesday morning, he always came to me, and I went over with him and unlocked the door for him. Uncle was ever so particular.
Is there any chance you might have left the keys lying in a place where they could have been stolen or borrowed?
No, never.
Did Mr. Noakes make a will, did you know?
Oh, yes. I'm sure he made a will. He always said, when I was worried about things, of course, I'm not very well off, but he always said, Aggie, I can't help you now because it's all tied up in my business, but it'll come to you after I'm dead. I suppose there won't be anything now.
Doesn't look like it, I'm afraid.
Oh, dear. I'm afraid it looks dreadful to be worrying about money just now, but... Well, I did think I'd have a little from my old age, and times are so hard, and...
Don't worry. I'm sure something will turn up.
Mr. Micawber.
I'd counted on it. Rather specially. Oh, I am so sorry. Please don't pay any attention.
Superintendent, shall you want Miss Twitterton any more? Because I really think...
Well, if Miss Twitterton wouldn't mind telling us, just as a matter of form, you understand... Where she was last Wednesday evening.
But Wednesday's always choir practice.
Ah, yes, and I suppose you'd quite naturally pop in on your uncle when that was over?
Oh, no. No, indeed, I didn't. I went home to supper. Wednesday's my busy night, you know.
That's so?
Oh, yes, of course. Because of market on Thursday. Why, I had half a dozen fowls to kill and pluck before I went to bed.
You don't mean to say you killed them yourself?
Oh, yes. It's so much easier than you would think when you're used to it.
That's right. Ring 'em or string 'em up, it's the sharp jerk that does it.
Superintendent, I really don't
find... Yes, you're quite right, my lady. Don't write that last bit down, Joe.
Very good, sir.
Just a little joke. Well, thank you, Miss Twitterton. I think that's all for the moment.
Oh, that's all right, then. It's all over, Miss Twitterton. Come along.
Thank you.
Oh, my lady, would you be so kind as to tell Mrs. Ruddle that she'll be wanted down here shortly? But I'd be grateful if I could have a word with Lord Peter first, if that's not inconvenient.
I'll tell him, Superintendent.
If she was as frank as that about the will, it does rather suggest that she doesn't have anything to hide.
Yeah, she knew about that will all right. A little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Not knowledge. Learning.
Hmm?
A little learning. Alexander Pope.
Is that so? Make a note of that for me, Joe.
Yes, sir. Alexander Pope.
It don't look as though anybody else could have got hold of the keys, but you never know.
Personally, I would prefer not to have a key to a house in which a body had been discovered.
Well, that's true, of course, my lord, but I...
Did you want me, mister?
Yes, close the door, please, Mrs. Ruddle.
That's just what I'm doing, ain't it?
I wanted to fix up a bit more exactly about the time of this murder. Sit down, that's right, now... Frank Crutchley says he saw Mr. Noakes alive and well on Wednesday evening about 6:20. You'd have gone home by then, I suppose.
Yes, I had. I only cleared for Mr. Noakes mornings.
And then last night, when you let his lordship in, did you find everything as usual?
That's right. Except in his dirty supper things on the table where he'd left them. He always had his supper at 7:30 regular. Then he'd sit in the kitchen with the paper till he came in here to the sitting room for the news at 9:30. Oh, very regular he was. Very regular sort of man.
So he'd had his supper, but his bed hadn't been slept in?
No, it hadn't.
Well, that helps us a lot. Now, Mr. Noakes ate his supper at 7:30, so presumably he was alive then. He didn't go to bed, so that gives us... when did he usually go to bed, Mrs. Ruddle, do you know?
11:00. Regular as clockwork. He'd switch off the wireless here and I'd see his candle go upstairs to bed. I can see his bedroom from my back window, plain enough.
Do you recollect his candle going upstairs to bed last Wednesday night, Mrs. Rutt?
Well, there I did not. I was that wore out. I dropped off the moment my head hit the pillow, so I was sound asleep by 11.
Well, it don't really matter, do it, sir, seeing his bed wasn't slept in.
Thank you, Sullen. Just confine yourself to taking notes, lad.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir.
Oh, Lord, Mr. Kirk. There now.
Have you thought of something?
Well, I don't know. It didn't come into my head before. Mr. Noakes must have been dead by 9:30.
What makes you think that, Mrs. Ruddle?
Well, his wireless wasn't working.
Oh, what's all this about the wireless?
Why, Mr. Kirk, if Mr. Noakes had been alive, he wouldn't have missed the 9:30 news, not if it was ever so. He set great store by the last news, poor soul, though what good it done him, I don't know. And I recollect saying to my son Bert last Wednesday night as ever was, funny thing, I says, Mr. Noakes ain't got his wireless going tonight, that ain't like him, I says.
But you couldn't possibly hear his wireless from your cottage with all the doors and windows shut.
Well, I won't deceive you. I did just pop over here a few minutes after 9:30 to borrow a drop of paraffin from his shed. And if the wireless had been on, then I couldn't have helped hearing of it.
9:30 news. Now, that's on the National.
That's right. He never bothered with the 6:00.
Joe, raise the lid of that radio cabinet and see what programme it's set to.
Yes, sir. The point is set to regional, sir.
Has anyone altered it since?
Not to my knowledge.
And it looks like you didn't have the wireless on for the 9:30 news. Yeah, we're getting there, aren't we? That's pretty satisfactory, that is. Dead or unconscious at 9:30, last seen alive about 6:20, at his supper at...
6:20? Go on. He was alive and kicking at 9:00.
What? How do you know? Why didn't you say so before?
Well, I thought you knowed it. You didn't ask. And how do I know? Because I've seen him, that's why. Hey, what are you getting at, trying to put something on me? You knows as well as I do he was alive at 9. Joe Sellen here was a-talking to him.
Eh? Joe Sellen?
That's right.
Joe, is this true?
Yes, it's true.
Course it is. You don't catch me that way, Joe Sellen. I come in 9:00 from fetching a pail of water and I see you as plain as a nose on my face a-talking to him at this very window. And I heard you too. Using language you did ought to be ashamed of yourself, not fit for a decent woman to listen to. I sees you and your helmet, so don't you go a-denying of it.
All right, Mrs. Ruddle, much obliged. That brings us pretty near the time. 9:00, you say it was?
Yeah, as makes no difference. But you ask Joe Sellen. If you want to know the time, ask a policeman.
That's very good. We just wanted a bit of confirmation on that there point. Two witnesses are better than one. That'll do. Now, just you run along and see here. Don't you go shooting your mouth off.
Oh, I'm sure I ain't one to talk.
Certainly not. That's the last thing anybody would accuse you of, Mrs. Ruddle.
Now, don't you go worrying now. I knows how to keep my mouth shut.
Now, Joe Sullen, what's the meaning of this?
Well, sir...
I'm disappointed in you, Joe. I'm astounded. I mean to say you was there at 9:00 talking to Mr. Noakes and you said nothing about it. Ain't you got no sense of duty?
I'm sure I'm very sorry, sir.
Sorry? That's a nice word to use. You, a police officer withholding important evidence, and you say you're sorry?
Well, I didn't know that old cat had seen me.
What the hell does it matter who saw you? You ought to have told me first thing. My God, Joe Sullen, I don't know what to make of you. Upon my word, I don't. You're for it, my lad.
I'm sorry.
What were you doing here that you didn't want anybody to know about, eh? Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You're left-handed, ain't you?
Oh, my God, sir, my lord, I never done it. I swear I never done it. Well, heaven knows I had cause enough, but I never laid a hand on him.
Cause? What cause? Come on now, out with it. What were you doing with Mr. Noakes?
Pull yourself together, Sullen. Mr. Kirk's not the man to be hard or unjust to anybody. Now, what's it all about?
Well, that there note case of Mr. Noakes's, what he lost 2 years ago.
Well, yes, what happened to it?
I found it. He dropped it in the road, see, and £10 it had in it. Well, my wife was desperate bad after the baby, sir, and the doctor said she ought to have special treatment, and I hadn't saved nothing, and the pay's not much, nor the allowance. Well, I meant to put it back right away. I thought he could spare it, being well off.
What happened about it?
Well, he found out, my lord. I don't know how, but he did. Threatened to report me. Well, of course, that would have been the end of me. I mean, out of a job, and no doubt give me work after that. So I had to pay him what he said to stop his tongue.
Pay him? That's blackmail. That's an indictable offence, blackmail. And compounding a felony.
Call it what you like, sir. It's life and death to me. 5 bob a week he's been bleeding me for these last 2 years.
Good God.
But I didn't kill him. I swear I didn't. You do believe me?
You'd better tell us now what did happen.
I came up here by the path, and I looked in at that there window. The curtains wasn't drawn, and it was all dark. Only then I see him coming in from the kitchen with a candle in his hand. He holds the candle up to the clock there, and I see it was 9:05.
You saw the clock from the window?
Yes, my lord.
Are you sure?
Well, yes, my lord. Then I taps on the window, and he comes over and opens it. I tells him I ain't got the money that week, and he laughs at me all nasty-like. All right, he says, I'll report you in the morning. So then I plucks up a heart and I says to him, you can't, it's blackmail. All this money you've been taking off me is blackmail, and I'll see you in dock for it. And he says, money? You can't prove you ever paid me money. Where's your receipts? You've got nothing on paper. So I swears at him.
No wonder.
Get out, he says, and slams the window shut. Well, I tries the doors, but they were locked. So I gets out, and that's the last I seen of him.
You didn't go into the house?
No, sir.
Are you telling the truth?
Honest to God I am, sir.
Selen, are you sure?
It's God's truth, my lord.
Yeah. Well, I don't rightly know what to say. See here, Joe, you better go straight over to Pagford and check out that alibi for Crutchley. See this man Williams that Crutchley shares a room with at the garage. I want to know if Frank Crutchley slept there last Wednesday night, what time he arrived there and so on.
Very good, sir.
I'll talk to you when you come back.
Very good, sir. I hope you won't be too hard on me, sir.
I says maybe. Be off with you now, Joe. Go on.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Well, my lord, and what do you think of that?
Well, it sounded straight enough so far as the note case was concerned. Well, there's a motive for you. A nice new motive, all a-growing and a-blowing. Widens the field a bit, though, don't it? Blackmailers don't, as a rule, stop at a single victim.
Why couldn't the young fool have come to his sergeant if he was short out of me? This is the devil and all. Beats me altogether. I wouldn't have believed it.
Look here, Kirk. You've had no official information about that theft, have you? When the money's been paid back twice over.
It's easy enough for you to be soft-hearted, my lord. It ain't your responsibility. Phew, that there Noakes must have been a proper old twister.
Superintendent, I am sorry for that poor devil, but... Well, curse it, I suppose I've got to say it.
Well?
That story of Selen's. It sounded all right, but it wasn't. One bit of it was a lie.
A lie?
He said he never came into the house. He said he saw the sitting room clock from that window.
Well?
Well, I tried to do the same thing a short time ago when I was out in the garden. I wanted to set my watch. Well, it cannot be done, that's all. That damn awful cactus hanging on the chain. It's in the way.
What?
I say that infernal bloody cactus is in the way. It covers the entire face of the clock. You cannot see it when you're standing at that window.
I'll try for myself.
Well, you could try from any point you like. It is absolutely and definitely impossible. You cannot see the clock from that window.
Well, they've gone. At last we're alone.
That's a blessing.
Miss Twitterton has been conveyed by Bunter back to Pagford, while the sweep has taken his fee and gone home, uttering many expressions of sympathy and goodwill.
And Kirk has taken himself off back to the station.
Oh, I'm glad they've all gone. I couldn't have stood much more, could you?
Not any more. I can't stand it now. What's the joke?
I was seeing the funny side of it. This looks not like a nuptial.
True, oh God. I rather think I am behaving like a lout.
Do you? Then all I can say is that your notion of loutishness is exceedingly feeble and limited. You simply don't know how to begin.
I didn't mean it to be like this. I wanted it all to be wonderful for you.
Oh, my dear cuckoo. Ah, I see Bunter coming back. We may get some tea. Mrs. Ruddle is in such a state of excitement that she's probably boiled the milk and put the tea leaves into the sandwiches.
Blow, Mrs. Ruddle.
By all means, but I expect Bunter's doing that already.
You show commendable patience with my temper.
I've seen tempers in comparison with which yours is a burst of heavenly harmony.
Whatever it is, you are trying to flatter me out of it.
Not at all. I'm only trying to tell you, in the nicest possible manner, that provided I were with you, I shouldn't greatly mind being deaf, dumb, half-blind and imbecile, afflicted with shingles and whooping cough, in an open boat without clothes or food, with a thunderstorm coming on. But you're being painfully stupid about it.
Oh, my dear, what the devil am I to say to that? Oh, ye gods, render me worthy of this noble wife. Look here, hadn't we better get the car out and run over to Broxford for dinner? There's sure to be some sort of pub there, and well, a little fresh air may help to blow the bats out of my belfry.
That's rather a good idea.
Seven dinner, Kirk. Yes? I've not time to deal with that now, Constable. Put it through the duty desk. Yes. Now, where was I? Yes, sir, I think you got me wrong, Sergeant. I ain't saying as you've been any way neglectful of your duty.
That's how it sounded to me, Mr. Kirk.
Well, it does seem a pity as a young fellow like Joe Sellon should have his career broke, all for the want of a bit of help and guidance from his sergeant. Not to mention this other suspicion, which it's to be hoped won't come to anything.
That's hardly fair, Mr. Kirk, blaming all this on me.
Has Sellon brought in his reports yet?
Yes, he wrote some out in the station, and he left a bunch of shorthand stuff. They're typing it up now. Doesn't seem to be complete, though. I suppose it breaks off at the point where...
Well, what do you expect? You don't suppose he'd go on taking down his own confession, do you? Be reasonable. What about this fellow Williams over at the garage?
I went over there with Sellon. We interviewed Williams, who says that Crutchley did, in fact, come into the garage just before 11 last Wednesday night and went to bed immediately.
And Williams didn't hear anything during the night to suggest that Crutchley left that room?
No, apparently not.
Well, I can't say as that helps us very much. I've got a theory that will clear the suspicion from Joe Sellon's name, if I'm right.
Oh? And what's that, Mr. Kirk?
That old Noakes wasn't murdered at all. That he fell off the stepladder while messing about with that silly cactus that's hanging in the sitting room. There have been medically documented cases of people sustaining head injuries and going about their normal business for several hours before the bleeding in the brain finally kills them.
It doesn't solve the problem of Sellon and the clock, though, does it? It's quite clear he's lying about that.
Possibly. But if that cactus pot had been taken down by old Noakes, say for watering or clipping or something of that sort, then Joe would have been able to see that clock from the window, wouldn't he? Ah, Bunter, I'm very sorry to disturb his lordship so late.
His lordship is in bed.
Well, the thing is, you see, there's a necessity as has arisen to re-examine the sitting room. There's something I need to look at as could have a significant bearing on the case. There's no need for Lord Peter to come down in person.
We should be most unwilling to obstruct the officers of the law in the execution of their duty, but you will permit me to point out that the hour is somewhat advanced and the available illumination inadequate. Besides that, the sitting room is situated exactly beneath his lordship's.
Superintendent?
My lord?
Merchant of Venice, Act 5, Scene 1. Peace, ho! The moon sleeps with the Endymion and would not be awaked.
I beg your pardon, my lord?
Don't mention it. Is there anything I can do for you?
Only to let me take another look around in the sitting room.
Had we but world enough and time, that trifling request, Superintendent, were no crime. But take whatever you like, Super. Only do as the poet sings. Come and go on lissom, clerical, printless toe. The first is Marvel, the second, Rupert Brooke.
I'm very much obliged. The fact is, I've got an idea.
I only wish I had half your complaint. Do you want to unfold your tale now, or will it do in the morning?
Oh, in the morning, my lord. There's no need for you to disturb yourself.
Well, good luck to it, and good night.
There now, Mr. Bunter, do all them steps steady.
That is what I'm attempting to do, Superintendent, but I do urge upon you the need to keep your voice down.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. Well, It would be a bit complicated by the looks of it to unhook the hole out of the pot. Let's see.
May I venture to suggest that it may be possible to remove the inner pot?
Yes, it comes out all right, though it's a damn tight fit. It can't have been removed.
Why is that?
Well, you see, there's a band of ornamental brass work round the top of the outer pot.
Yes?
Well, it's all pierced work, so the brass polish applied to the outer pot has left a clear pattern on the inner pot, the earthenware one, sort of like a stencil. So, if you remove the inner pot and put it back, you wouldn't be able to put it back in exactly the same position, and that would show. You'd see at least an edge of earthenware without any polish on it at all. No, the inside pot has not been moved. Did Crotchley polish the brass this morning?
I fancy not. He brought no brass polish with him, nor did he use the materials contained in the kitchen cupboard. Will there be anything further tonight, Superintendent?
I suppose the clock couldn't have been moved.
See for yourself.
Yeah. Looks solidly fixed. No hook or nail to which it might temporarily have been transferred. Well, that seems to settle it. My theory won't stand up.
That's most regrettable, Superintendent. May I show you to the door?
It's regrettable for me, right enough. But for one of my officers, it's a damn sight more than regrettable.
In that episode of Busman's Honeymoon, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael, Lady Peter Wimsey, Sarah Bedell, Bunter, Peter Jones, Superintendent Kirk, Peter Vaughan, Mrs. Ruddle, Pearl Hackney, Miss Twitterton, Rosemary Leach, the Reverend Goodacre, Gerald Sim, Constable Sellen, Christopher Beeney, Sergeant Foster, Alexander John, narrator, John Westbrook. Busman's Honeymoon was adapted by Alistair Beaton from the book by Dorothy L. Sayers, and was produced by Martin Fisher.